Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Hall, live and local. Chicago sports talk for your morning on 670 The Score.
Yoan in the air, left center field. This is gone! For the first time in 2 years, light it up.
2-1 to Mercedes.
And your mean tattoos this ball. Oh, where is it going to land? Bring him home. Welcome to Chicago 73.
His second home run of the year, an introduction to the home folks.
The 1-2 to Bryant, swinging a drive towards center field, pretty well hit, back toward the center field fence, that ball is gone. Chris Bryant hit a low fastball and golfs it over the center field fence, and the Cubs lead 1-0.
Anderson's 0-1, a swing and a fly ball toward left, down the line, deep in the corner, that ball's got a chance, gone.
Two-run homer, Javier Baez. He hit a breaking ball that might have been down and out of the strike zone, and he golfed it right down the line and left. His second of the year. It's a two-run homer, and the Cubs lead 3-2.
Lanky southpaw going to work on Anthony Rizzo.
Cubs lead 3-2, eighth inning. Rizzo lines one to deep right field. It's got a chance. Gone. A screaming line drive home run for Anthony Rizzo to right, and the Cubs now lead 4-2.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. It is a glorious Friday morning in the fine city of Chicago. It is a day to celebrate baseball. It is the 9th of April, and we are moving through the start of the season, Mr. David, and feeling pretty good about both teams today.
I think so. Yeah, it's a good day for both teams to take a breath and get the day off and kind of reset. It's been a pretty interesting first week. You do feel better today than you did a day ago. Yesterday, we came in here and we were talking about the Cubs' anemic hitting. They go out and they get 11 hits. We were talking about the White Sox mismanagement of the bullpen. They get a great start out of Lance Lynn. They don't need the bullpen. It's unnecessary. So this was a good day to reflect on the first week. And the Sox have had some ups, some downs, but throughout, the one consistent thing has been your mean Mercedes is, to me, and I think to a lot of people, the best story in baseball right now because of where he came, because of what he's doing. And if you were a Sox fan that went to the game yesterday and you waited out the rain delay, he delivered and he gave you what you waited for.
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, it was tough. Having a few different friends that went to the game and talking to different people while they were out there, I think it was difficult. I could have gone to the game, to be honest with you, but I thought, my God, I can also watch it in the comfort of my own home. I knew I couldn't take my son. I thought it'd be great to go to a game with him because we've gone to a lot of different games together over the years.
Was the weather the reason?
Yes, the weather was the reason. I just, to be honest with you, I thought I would be better served watching the Cubs game and then being able to watch the Sox and not be out there and kind of getting rained on and the whole bit. It really was as simple as that. I had a friend who had an extra ticket, and I was, you know, tempted, and I felt bad about not jumping on it, but I also the couch was just too comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And
very
I thought,
comfortable.
I'm coming in here in the morning. Like, do I want to be out?
I'm glad you did.
Can the horse get out of the barn, David? Yeah. Is that possible?
Well, I'm glad you stayed home and watched it on your couch, because now you're more rested than Tony La Russa looked yesterday. So Steve Phillips doesn't have to worry about you feeling fatigued or how you're going to be in August. We're getting some great texts from 312-644-6767, people weighing in on the Steve Phillips opinion. And also just on the idea of Tony La Russa being able to withstand the rigors of a season. 773. He looks more awake than the Cub bats.
Oh man, that is just cold. Is that a shot at Marquis? Is that
so.
The idea?
And then 815. Marquis should worry more about the Cubs' last place in atrocious offense that they can only beat up on Pittsburgh than the White Sox manager.
I don't think the Cubs are in last place, are they? I don't think that they – is that what he's saying? He's saying they can only beat up on the last place?
I think so. I think that the Pirates factor is something that, you know, when we celebrate the Cubs having three home runs and 11 hits, people are quick to remind you that they're playing the Pirates. What about the Sox, though? They played the Royals, so I think that's the other – the Royals are supposed to be an improving team, maybe one of the surprises in the division. You see some good players in that lineup. But they're still the Royals.
Yeah, I mean, the Royals are on a rebuild, and a lot of people thought they could take a step up. Listen, it's early in the season. We don't know who the teams are yet. I get it. Pittsburgh's like a 4A club. And, you know, when you were watching the Sox against Seattle, they kept mentioning, you know, Seattle's got a lot of players they're going to be bringing up. And they'll look completely different by the end of the year than they do right now. So I get that, too. It's not a good team. Right. But goodness gracious, I mean, come on.
Frank Thomas called the Mariners a AAA team, I think. When the Sox lost that game, the postgame show on NBC Sports Chicago, I think he referred to them as, well, they look like a AAA team to me, and that's why he was feeling bad about the way that they lost that last game. Another texter says, 219, in reaction to Lance Lynn's complete game shutout, which was historic, sign Lance Lynn to an extension now. This dude is ready.
This dude's rotting on the vine. Let's see what happens. It could be that you want him back for another year. How old is Lance Lynn? He's 33?
Something I think
like
so.
That? He's a horse. He knows how to pitch. Watching him pitch yesterday, he was masterful. It's like it's the difference between watching a guy that has great stuff and you're like, look at this guy. He's going to be a great pitcher versus a guy that's been through all of it and just knows how to get it done. Absolutely, unequivocally knows how to pitch.
He'll be 34 on May 12th. So you're right. When you look at the long-term prognosis and the extension talks, you have to consider that he is 34, and there are a lot of miles on those tires.
We've got to get to the phone lines. A lot of people want to check in. We should tell you that the Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. 312-644-6767. We'll start with Jack. Jack's on the road. Hey, Jack.
Morning, Jack.
Good morning, guys. Great show. I listen to it all the time. Boy, you know, when you mentioned Wilbur Wood, I grew up in Chicago in the 70s. I remember there was one time, and I can't remember if it came to fruition or not, where he was going to pitch both ends of a doubleheader. And that was like this, whoa, you know, I can't remember what happened. And then I start thinking, where has the knuckleballer gone?
Yeah.
I can't name one. And you think, you know, in this day and age of you hear throw it, I have six pitches, I can throw the timing off, which is, yeah, you throw the timing off of a hitter. That's good pitching. Okay. You know, how about a knuckleballer in the middle of a pitching rotation? Wouldn't that be wonderful? Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a lost art. And who was the last knuckleballer? There was a young kid on the South Side. He ended up bouncing around. He had been like a Charlie Huff disciple or something. Charlie Hager. That didn't work out.
No, that was a pretty sad ending to the Charlie Hager story.
Okay.
Yeah, tragic too.
Yep.
But the caller, good call. Wilbur Wood started both ends of a doubleheader against the Yankees, one of two pitchers to do so since Newcomb. So that was a long time ago, and he failed to get any outs in the first game and took the loss. Chuck Tanner decided to let him start game two, the nightcap.
And how did he do then?
That you have to ask.
I could call Les.
Could call Les.
Oh, my God.
If Les has still got us online, Les, call in.
Les, call in. Let us know.
312-644-6767.
That was 1973.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he got beat up. He got beat twice, losing both decisions, 12-2, and the Sox were shut out 7-0 in the nightcap.
That's where the knuckleballers
come. Thanks for asking.
Okay, let's get to John. John's in Joliet. John, good morning.
Hey, John.
I'm so mad about Chuck Tanner putting him in both games. What the hell is the matter with you, Chuck? Come on. Hey, David Hall, why are you putting dump in Chicago White Sox coffee this morning? Be happy. You're mean. The machine Mercedes just went deep, baby. Lance went 9. Everything's fine. Beautiful day for the White Sox.
John,
what
did I say that was not excited? I'm excited about the White Sox. I gave them the props. What did I say?
Oh, you've ruined it all for you've ruined it for all of us.
How?
Oh, check me out, man.
Let's get to Kevin. Kevin's in Palatine. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
So, I don't want to be negative, but I don't know if we'll get 11 hits in the next 3 games combined. So, it goes right after my call yesterday. I loved all 11. I thought they were amazing, but I want to see it on Saturday. Like I told you yesterday, I'll be shocked if they go double digits, but I will hope for – Kimbrough was great yesterday. But I do have to say for everyone, every Sox fan that keeps calling up about the Pirates, this is what Steve Stone said about Seattle before the first game. The first pitcher they pitched, Justice Sheffield, is a middle reliever who he said he couldn't believe was starting. The guy they faced the second game needs Tommy John surgery. And the third guy they faced had 8 walks in 4 innings. And the Royals blow. So it's great. Mercedes is a great story. But if you're going to rip on the Pirates, the Royals suck, and Seattle will be lucky to win 70 games.
It's a good point, Kevin.
Let's not go crazy here. Seattle is God freaking awful. Thanks, guys.
Kevin,
have a great weekend.
Yeah.
Mitch Keller pitches for the Pirates tomorrow. I think the Cubs can feel good about it getting more than a few hits. They should feel like they can get 11 off a guy with a 9 ERA.
David, the Cubs have been shut out by first-time starters who are never heard again. Some dude you've never heard of has come up and thrown 8 innings and 9 strikeouts. So I don't care who it is. I would rather face the Keller that pitched yesterday with the 47 ERA on the Royals. Thanks, guys.
Fair enough.
Good day.
We have a texter checking in saying R.A. Dickey won a Cy Young in 2012. I guess I was thinking just locally. And then speaking of locally, we have another texter saying there's a kid from Brother Rice that's in the Red Sox minor league system who's a knuckleballer. We'll have to look him up.
Okay. Yeah. But the point is well taken. There aren't a lot of knuckleballers left
in
Major League Baseball. Everybody's growing up trying to throw the ball as hard as they can, often as they can. And it's all about the velo.
Yes, it is.
It's all about the velo.
It's all that matters.
Yeah.
Let's get to Hank. Hank's in Gurnee. Hey, Hank.
Morning, Hank.
Morning, guys. Hey, I just wanted to call in and say, isn't Steve Phillips the idiot that signed Bobby Bonilla to a 100-year contract?
Yes.
I don't know, I'm a Mets fan. I wouldn't piss on that guy if he was on fire.
Oh, boy. I don't think you can say that on the radio. Ouch. I hope we got that.
Ouch. Yeah, I hope so.
If we dump that rake, that's just
mean. That's just mean. But, yeah, I think Steve Phillips is the guy that signed Bobby Bonilla to that long-term contract. But he is a very good analyst, and I think his opinion's pretty valid. Will he be right about Tony La Russa? Was it unfair? That's up for everyone to decide. I think he said a lot of things that people were thinking. So
Kevin calls in quite a bit. Apparently he's upset. One of the texters who says, Kevin, your mean might have more hits the rest of the week than the entire Cubs lineup. I don't think that's about how bad the opponents are, but that's a pretty funny comment, given how fast your mean Mercedes has started the season. And what a glorious and wondrous story it is. And let's see what happens. Let the guy play for a while. I'd be very curious. Listen, he's got to have a hole in his lineup, right? In his repertoire.
What other
people will go after
do
him.
You have if you're Tony La Russa?
I agree.
You don't have a lot of options. You have had injuries the first week of the season.
Mm-hmm.
You also have a guy that's hitting over 500. He has more hits than outs this year. Think about that.
Yeah, it's incredible. I believe does anyone know what Danny Mendick is batting? I believe he's been awfully good. I'm having a hard time remembering his outs, if that's possible.
Danny Mendick hasn't been in the lineup much.
He's been in a couple games.
So, but he has not been an everyday guy.
He's been up since he came up. He's played two games, I believe, right?
He has one hit and three. He's hitting .333.
Yeah, he's doing pretty well.
We love the Cubs to be hitting .333.
One hit,
David.
And three at bats.
We love the Cubs to be hitting .333.
Hasn't he walked a couple of times?
It was a glorious game. Danny Mendick is here to rescue
the Sox.
I'm just
saying, I think he's doing okay.
In all seriousness, would you, with the White Sox left field problem right
yes.
this second?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Tim Anderson, retroactive, he comes back.
Okay.
Would you leave Mendick at short and
no.
move?
No.
No? For a couple of days?
No.
You're still on Andrew Vaughn.
Would you play?
I might move Mendick to second.
Nico
Dustin.
Horner Wait or David Bode at shortstop if Javi Baez were coming back from a DL stint?
Yeah, you would always.
Tim Anderson's your shortstop.
Anderson, yeah, and he's
but
the
Tim
best
Anderson
hitter
could
in the American
play
League.
Left field.
God. That sounds really experimental.
Yeah.
Worse than the Vaughn
experiment?
Okay,
Danny Mendick
I'm just
is
asking.
4
I'm just,
for yeah, 7.
I'm
according,
throwing stuff out
he
there.
You're a content
he went
machine.
Danny Mendick went 3-for-3 in one of his games. So you better look
what
that back up.
What are you talking
up.
About?
I'm talking about Danny Mendick.
Okay.
I said he was hot because I'm watching the games and I saw the guy on base.
All right. Well,
can you clarify that, please?
We will,
saying
we will do
he
that during the
hand?
Break. We got to get to the break. We got the
all
pick
right,
six
right.
coming up,
six.
And I'm doing my Danny Mendick research.
I'm adding a pick six question. When Tim Anderson returns, should he play left field?
That's not even.
I would like to add a pick six question. Who's writing Danny Mendick's speech for Cooperstown?
Oh boy, I mean
he's played in one game.
Okay, that's not true. Yeah, it's not. None of this is true. We're going to have to get to the bottom of all of it. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
You are listening to the number one sports morning show in Chicago, Mully and Haw. But now you can watch the show live on Twitch. Just search 670 the score on twitch.tv or on the Twitch app. Check it out now.
Twitch is fun.
This is Sports Radio 670 the score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Do you like this less than dominant but ever battling version of Jake Arrieta? Do you agree with David Ross that...
But I thought his stuff kind of was ticking up as the game went on.
Will he wind up as the Cubs' winningest pitcher this year after his 2-0 start?
That's interesting. Who's going to lead them in wins? I think maybe the guy pitching today could wind up leading them in wins, believe it or not, just because it seems like, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but it seems like Kyle is facing kind of the number one guy on most teams. I mean, I know that this will even out as the year goes on, but I think being in the three spot is nice to start the season, and Zach Davies is going to be a pretty good pitcher. You know, there was nothing like Jake Arrieta when he was dominating baseball for those 2 years or year and, you know, a half, whatever it was. He was absolutely unhittable. And every time he took the mound, you didn't know if he was going to throw a no-hitter or what was going to happen, but he was must-watch television, and he had an incredible run. And I think that you'd always prefer that sort of dominant performance, but it's interesting to watch him now that he's come back and to see the difference in him as a pitcher and how he has to change what he's doing and everything about it. He is battling, and he is – you know, trying to get through things and grinding, and he's not the guy he once was, but I really like this version of him. And I think you can get a lot of good things can happen when you have a guy that has had so much success. And, you know, you think about that guy's career and how he was kind of a failed pitcher, and then he became the best pitcher in baseball. And now, you know, he's had injuries plague him for a few years, and he's aging, and he comes back, and he's just battling like hell. So I like the storyline all the way around, but obviously you prefer a guy that is completely dominant, but this is interesting too.
Quite an evolution. I mean, when you see Jake Arrieta on the mound at PNC Park in that uniform for the Cubs, it takes you back to 2015. His most significant start, I think, as a Cub came in that ballpark.
Yep. And Rossi mentioned it.
And I think it's impossible not to make that connection. Yep. And he's such a different pitcher now. Yesterday, he didn't have the command that we remember from 2015 and 2016. And he wasn't that guy. I think a base runner reached base in each of the first five innings for the Pirates. So he had to overcome the lack of command. He is at this point of his career, he's got the guile and the moxie and the know-how to do that. And he's going to be that guy that probably has outings like yesterday where he makes the best of what he has. And it's not the Jake Arrieta that you remember, but it's good enough. Will he lead the Cubs in victories? I kind of doubt it. I think Zach Davies is who I said at the beginning of the year, going to stick with that prediction until it doesn't look like that's going to be the case. But I do think this. We talked about the impact that like Lance Lynn can have on the White Sox rotation, challenging their other four guys to meet the standard that he set yesterday. Jake Arrieta has the same impact on the Cubs starters because he sets a standard. Even though it might be hard to reach for him, harder than it was before during his first stint, it's a standard and a way of doing business, and that is a good influence on this Cubs pitching staff.
A pick six to end the half!
Which was your favorite Cubs homer? Chris Bryant's shot to dead center, Javi Baez's Masters tribute golf shot, or old reliable Anthony Rizzo's jump on it dinger? Were you surprised to learn the Cubs were 5-0 all-time when those three guys homer in the same game? Doesn't it seem like that happened more often? Was that the final time with all three of these guys on in this?
Oh gosh, that
just took a turn.
Who wrote that question? Yeah, that's just awful.
Do we really
want to talk about goodbye now? That's sad. I hope it's not the final time. I am surprised that they haven't done it more than five times as a trio, because they have hit a lot of meaningful home runs as Cubs. My favorite one, though, I mean, it was fun to watch Javi reach down and get it. So I guess from a pure entertainment standpoint, that was cool because we just talked about how bad he looked the day earlier chasing and not being able to catch up with a fastball. And then he reaches down and he hits one out like that. But I was watching Chris Bryant early on and I was like, okay, when you see him, you're reminded about what he did the day before as well. And he's with the bat on his shoulder and went down looking at a key moment. And when he hit that home run, I thought, well, that was just – maybe that yesterday was the exception, and the rule will be he's going to get off to a good start. And he had a couple hits yesterday that makes you think that. So I think the most significant one for the Cubs was Chris Bryant.
Yeah, it's a good answer, David. I think that Bryant, if I'm not mistaken, that's the first time he's had two extra base hits. He had the homer, and I believe he hit a double. Yep. So that hasn't happened with the kind of regularity that you expect it to happen in. It's weird. One guy's an MVP. The other guy's a run-up MVP. And the other guy is like the most consistent player, hitter on the team. And they haven't all hit a home run in a game only just five times. It just seems like that should have happened more, just the quality of the players. I don't know. But and you also think that if you're facing a bad pitcher, if a guy is struggling, that, multiple people can get to him. But obviously when they're all hitting 5-0, I don't know. I hope that's not the last time. I hope we don't have to keep thinking that way in this kind of, farewell go round or whatever we're calling it. I really hate that idea that, the band is on their last tour kind of thing. And I don't think we need to look at it that way. And I don't appreciate you bringing that up, Dustin. So that's all I can say about that.
A pick six of 100 yards.
What did you think about Rick Hahn saying Tony La Russa put, quote, too much blame on himself for keeping Matt Foster in the game too long against the Mariners? Do you believe him?
No, I don't believe him. And I think Rick put too much, cover on Tony La Russa. I don't think you need to protect the guy. He's a Hall of Famer. They're not going to take him out of it because he made a bad decision. He made a bad decision. He admitted it. Great. I mean, let's move on. I don't know why Rick felt the need to, to compliment Tony for acknowledging that he had done something. I mean, I'm just saying, if you're Rick Hahn and you put that team together and you're watching that game, are you thinking like, oh, you know, Tony really did a great job taking responsibility? Or are you thinking, get him out of the game, like, get him out. Why are you leaving him in?
Wake up.
The rest of us were.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I mean, God bless you, Rick. I don't think he needs your help.
I don't believe him for a second. I think that Rick Hahn was probably watching that game. He tells us a lot. He's a fan. He was watching that game like a fan and probably thinking, what are you doing? Get him out. He doesn't have it today. Eight hitters? Are you kidding me? And then he took a deep breath, and he did a nice job yesterday of reminding us how important patience is to baseball executives. You know, you have to strike a balance. We talk about, I think Bruce compared it to like an NFL mentality, and it isn't. It isn't more than the equivalent of like a week one start for the Bears or the fourth quarter of week one game. And so you have to be patient. Rick Hahn certainly showed that, reminded us of that yesterday, even though I believe that he was maybe overstating the fact that, you know, Tony La Russa took the blame. Great. Congratulations. You held yourself accountable. That's what you should do.
Exactly.
Don't make the decision next time so you don't have to be in this situation. And I think that Hahn probably felt the same way, but he did a good job of just putting a positive. This was before the game, so they hadn't won yet, and he did a nice job of putting a positive spin on the first week of the season.
Pick six!
After the Bulls' third straight victory, dare we say they have turned the corner? Has your opinion of where the team's ceiling is changed?
I don't know that it's changed. I still think that the ceiling for this team is probably get into the playoffs and they could win a series, right? I don't see them. I think everything would have to go right. They're capable of doing that. I think we've seen three victories in a row. It's fun to watch. They are a fun team to watch now that they have Vooch and they have Zach LaVine. They had both had 22 last night. What I think that the change has been, and Billy Donovan alluded to this, he called over Coby White and Lauri Markkanen before the game and during the shoot around and said they appreciated how they have handled their new roles. Their acceptance of those new roles has been important. Lowry is now averaging, I think, 12 points coming off the bench in the five games that he's been a reserve. Coby White looks like a guy that is used to that role, and they've got to get used to that role because it's not about them anymore. So if this Bulls team continues to progress, yeah, they can win a playoff series.
Can we answer this question after we see what happens with Atlanta tonight? Because I think it's a really important game for them and one of the teams that they're kind of chasing here. So I still need more information. You know what I love about what the Bulls have done? They have played three straight kind of undermanned teams, right? Three straight teams that have key players missing. Can't we just schedule a Lakers game right now just for tonight, have the Lakers come in or go there? Either way, I don't care. But you need to play that team a couple times before everybody comes back. And I'm not saying that's the only reason they're going to win, but I love the idea that you catch opponents at the right time, and what do? You jump on them and you win the game. So I think it's really important that they've got that feeling of a few wins in a row, and I'm really curious to see if that helps them tonight. I like what I've seen. I like Vooch. I like Zach LaVine, this version of him, where he seems to really enjoy an assist as much as a 30-point game. And I think both, you know, you got to stay aggressive, Lauri Markkanen. You got to stay aggressive, Coby White. They're not going to call plays for you. I love that the coach made that distinction and that these guys are doing what they can. You know, I thought Markkanen was good yesterday, and I really enjoyed watching that game. And I hope that tonight it goes just as well, because I'm pretty sure there's no baseball, and I'm going to need some sports fix of some kind, and it's an important game for the Bulls.
That is a pick six.
Do you like the Blackhawks trade with Florida that sent Lucas Carlson and Lucas Walmark to Florida for Brett Connolly and Riley Stillman, along with the signing rights to Finnish forward Henrik Borgstrom? Connolly is a veteran guy who can help immediately, but Borgstrom, who would arrive next year, is he the key to the deal?
Boy, I mean, you can't really say much nicer things about him than Stan Bowman, who, just given his delivery, it's just kind of like watching Len O'Connor give a commentary.
Len O'Connor.
Yeah, it's a Len O'Connor reference to Stan Bowman. But honest to God, he said that he's the best player he's seen in college in the last 10 years or or one of the best players. He went to the University of Denver. They won the title, right? Yep. NCAAs. And apparently he's just like a magician with the stick. And he played for Joel Quenneville, and it did not go well. And we have certainly seen Joel. I love Joel. And it's usually defensemen, young defensemen, that didn't really have a place for in Joel's heart. But the idea that you got Kevin Lankin in here, and it's a teammate of his, and they've got another teammate of his from Denver, I think, right? Ian Mitchell. So you bring him in, and he's comfortable, and he knows players. I look forward to him coming in next year. I look forward to a big guy like that that has kind of big-time skills, and I hope that he's good. But I think in the right now that Conley can really help them just in terms of being a big body guy that is on a big contract, and that's one of the reasons they want to get rid of him.
I think this move accentuates the strengths of Stan Bowman. Number one, it was a salary cap-driven move because of Conley's contract. Yep. They were able to absorb, so they got Borgstrom, a player that they see a lot of potential in, and you do trust, again, Stan Bowman's evaluation of these foreign players.
Oh,
because
my God.
He finds
them. Yep.
From Kubalik to Borgstrom, yes, to the guys on the roster. You look at the rookies that have come through, and there are finds from, you know, Pugh Suter, all a lot of examples.
Yes.
The other thing is that I think it underscores what the Hawks are doing. They're rebuilding without calling it that. They're in the contention for a playoff spot without really ever having to bottom out. We thought they were going to bottom out. They're a fun team to watch. They play an exciting brand of hockey. They've got a lot of young players. They've got as many as 8 rookies. So when you make a deal like this, I think it's a smart move for the cap perspective and also from a talent acquisition perspective, because Borgstrom is a guy that can help the Hawks. And why do you say that? Because Stan Bowman, frankly, after starting the year amid a lot of criticism, has earned the benefit of the doubt with guys who are these foreign players like Borgstrom.
It's a pick six.
Do you like seeing Augusta push back against the golfers with only 12 under par? Did you miss Tiger yesterday?
I think you're always going to miss Tiger when he's not at Augusta. Absolutely. It hangs over the entire tournament. You wish him well, and you wish he were there. I don't necessarily, from a sports fan perspective, when the course kind of wins and is part of the story of the day, I'd rather see guys at the top of their game, professionals excel at the highest level, have lower scores. I like that. You know, my guy Jordan Spieth, my pick, is still under par. Justin Rose is atop the leaderboard. But I wish more people were in contention, more of the big names were playing better than they did in round one.
Justin Rose is a guy that is always having a good first day at the Masters. That is not unusual. I believe he's led it 4 times. And I know from just having worked with, had our little pool going, Masters pool, that if you took him, you had the feeling you were going to get your money back and everything was going to be great because you're going to win one of the days, and that's always fun. But probably not going to win the tournament, in my opinion. We'll talk to our buddy Mark Canizzaro. He's out there, and we'll do that next. But I can't wait to ask him about the conditions, because we saw this in November, and I guess it was rainy and it was soft and it seemed like the putting was unbelievable, and now the ball is just running. I mean, I think you really got to be careful. And my guy, Justin Thomas, I picked, I guess I forgot he can't putt, and it's really an important thing you need to do in this particular tournament.
Yeah.
So can't wait to talk to Mark. We'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
Coming off an eagle birdie run is Justin Rose at 10. How about that? What a run. Eagle, birdie, birdie. From 2 over to 2 under in 3 holes.
That's going to be the trick now the rest of the week. Hopefully you can just run off instinct a little bit. I've competed in these big tournaments quite a few times, and I've got one of them to my name, but we're looking for more. But I've had some situations in my career that should stand me in good stead. But listen, I think to keep the expectations relatively low, even in this situation, is probably not a bad thing for me for the remainder of the week, and just keep it one shot at a time, just keep committing. This golf course, you can never get ahead of yourself on. We've seen it many times around here, but it's all about commitment. And I think it's about enjoying it. You know, I'm obviously walking the walk with Clarkey and just trying to really enjoy being out here. I think, you know, being grateful to be out there today after a month off was kind of part of the mindset today. So it would be crazy to try and change that too much going into tomorrow.
Mullion Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the English Invader. That is Justin Rose, and he is leading at the Masters, always does well on the first day. And we are delighted to welcome in our friend, the man that has literally written the book, 7 Days in Augusta, behind the scenes at the Masters. He, Mark Canizzaro of the New York Post, fine columnist and, of course, author. And we are delighted to welcome him on the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park on North Avenue, or apnissan.com. Mark, good morning. How are you?
Morning, Mark.
Good morning, boys. How you doing today?
Good.
I got to tell you, so I'm watching some of it yesterday, and I'm getting ready for the weekend and excited about it. And I couldn't even tell a difference between November with the crowd. Like, I didn't see – I know there's no stand set up or anything like that. It didn't seem like there were very many fans. Did I get this wrong? Do they not have people there? Am I missing something?
No, they have people there. There's absolutely more people than there were in November, but, they have not released the percentage or the numbers or anything like that. And as you said, there's no they opted to put no grandstands there. I think probably for the optics of it, they didn't want to, you know, people watching TV and seeing, you know, got people, you know, kind of jammed together in a grandstand kind of thing. But there's definitely more, you know, because in November there were no ropes. They didn't even have any ropes, you know, like, you know, lining the fairways. They had like little, like, you know, very inconspicuous little chalk lines where you weren't supposed to cross over. It was very strange, but. There are definitely absolutely more people milling around this year than there were in November. You know, but my guess is, and here's the weird thing: I heard from somebody from here who is in the know, I don't think there's a lot of quote unquote real fans here because, from what I understand, each member got 4 tickets, each player got 4 tickets, and each volunteer got 2 tickets. So if you start doing the math on that, there's not a lot left for your south side of Chicago, people that want to go get their tickets through the lottery system. So, and the other thing is I actually did a book signing for my book at Augusta, downtown Augusta, a couple of nights ago, and this is a ghost town down there. I mean, there's not a lot of foot traffic, not a lot of people down there. So you can tell that the quote-unquote real fans really, you know, aren't here.
Well, one of them that is there is Rory McIlroy's dad, and he got onto the course. Then Rory McIlroy hit him. So I don't think he would probably want to be there. That kind of typified some of the tough days that some of the bigger names had, Mark. Any stand out to you? What was your biggest surprise, the guys who weren't quite on the top of their game?
I think two of my biggest surprises, but 1A and 1B were Bryson, for starters. Mm. I mean, you know, I felt like he had kind of cleared his mind a little bit, as much as he can clear his mind, because there's a lot going on in there. You know, from last year's debacle, you know, where he just was so much, you know, so many things going on with his 48-inch driver that he was experimenting with, all that kind of stuff. I was surprised. He made one birdie in 18 holes yesterday and just didn't drive the ball well. So that surprised me. I was surprised that Rory struggled again in a first round. He just, I don't know what it is, man. I mean, you know, last year he shot 75 and then on the first day, and then on 14 under the next 3 days. And I think I was mildly surprised that Dustin, you know, although he didn't shoot a horrible round, I think he was 2 over. But that, you know, he shot a bit of an indifferent round, in his first round of defense, so to speak. So, but I think the two biggest surprises to me were Bryson, definitely, and Rory, certainly. It, of course, seems to be all the guys that I picked. You know, I picked Rory in my newspaper to win the damn thing. And I also, you know, wrote a column about Lee Westwood, who's playing with house money, and he's done so well at Augusta. And I think he shot 6 over yesterday. So the moral to that story is whomever's reading my stuff, whatever I would call it, I use that word loosely, don't bet on it.
I took
that on my picks.
I took Justin Thomas, and I was saying to David, like, I guess I forgot he can't putt. It seems like the greens, the ball is running. It's so different than November, and it looks different. I mean, I get it. It's a different time of year, but how difficult are the greens going to be this week?
Well, you know, the bummer is I think there's some rain supposed to come in, you know, later today and then into tomorrow. So I'm not, you know, and again, and they can manipulate it. They've got this sub-air system that, like, is magically, like, sucks all the moisture out of the grass and the fairways and the greens. But, you know, there's only so much you can do if depending on how much rain they get. But, yeah, I mean, they've had a perfect lead-up weather-wise to have this course dialed into exactly where they want it. Which is fast and, you know, which is fast and you know, and hard and a little bit, you know, not, I wouldn't say dry, but so, yeah, there's no question. Yesterday was a bit of a shock to the players who maybe played their first Masters in November and then came here and saw this yesterday. And that was very much the talk leading into the, you know, the week with the brackets rounds, guys talking about how this place is going to be impossible come Sunday if they're, you know, if it remains the same. So, but that's the way they want it, and to be honest with you, with the way the greens are contoured and even the fairways and stuff like that, that's where the way the golf course was built. You know, it was for these guys to have to deal with these nuances and the angles and things like that. And the more the speedier the greens, the more that accentuates, you know, that and puts more pressure on your game to accommodate it.
Only 12 guys under par. Jordan Spieth tied for eighth, one under. He comes in hot, Mark, and I think he has had some success at Augusta, but it's been a while. In terms of what he is capable of doing over the weekend, where is he coming in, and what are reasonable expectations for him? I'm only asking because I picked him.
Well, yeah, so there's no intrinsic value to this question.
No, right, exactly.
Jordan was one of my picks as well. He's about the only one in my top five that I sent into the newspaper to put in as my picks, that even in having a sniff at this point. But he's coming in really good form, and obviously he won last week, which is huge for his, you know, his confidence. And he has played here really well at Augusta. Obviously he won in 15. But, you know, he threw the 2016 one away. He should have won that. He had a 5-shot lead on, you know, making the turn. And he's even had, like, a backdoor really low, you know, finish, or say high finish, I should say, with a great, great final round a couple years ago. So he's come in and done really well when he's been in form and not in form. So I kind of look at him as like a Phil Mickelson guy. That when he tries down that early lane, it doesn't matter how badly he's playing leading in. You know, he's going to play well here. So I felt all week that he was going to be a factor. And just because he's, you know, 6 shots back after one day, the bottom line is you mentioned the number. It's what the position is and how many people he has to leapfrog or whatever get up there. You know, Justin Rose had a magical day yesterday. There is no way Justin Rose is going to shoot 65 again today. Traditionally, it's so hard for these guys to put back-to-back crazy good rounds together. It's just, I don't know what that dynamic is, but it's very difficult. And Justin Rose came in yesterday with zero expectation because he hadn't played the month. And, you know, when you know how it is, if there's no pressure on you, you don't have pressure on yourself. Like, I got it. Like, Rory's got pressure on himself. I got to do well the first round. I got to play four good rounds. Justin came in completely opposite and had just had a magical afternoon yesterday. I can't imagine him stamping something anything better than, you know, something in and around 70, 72, maybe 69, whatever the number is today. I don't think he's going to blow up. My point is, a guy like Jordan at one under is by no means out of this thing when one guy is at 7 under, you know. So, you know, all those guys that are at the even pars and whatnot, even the one overs, you know, a lot of things could happen between today and Sunday. There's no question.
Mark, can we ask you an NFL question? Put your NFL hat on. When we look at what the Jets did, Sam Darnold traded, did they get more than you thought they were going to get? Did they get it about right? And what do you think of his future? And I get it. They're restarting, and they got a lot of picks now. But now the whole NFL draft is locked into quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. I guess Atlanta might trade that pick, quarterback. These guys are going to go flying off the board. Is it Zach Wilson? Do you think it's a lock?
Yeah, I think it's pretty locked in Zach Wilson. And I'm not a huge – I have nothing against Zach Wilson. But you know, you just mentioned the word start over. The Jets seem like they're starting over every 15 minutes, you know, and that's just maddening to their fans, right? And, you know, Sam Darnold is 23 freaking years old, you know, they trend way as a bust. Not a bust, but, you know, as a guy that didn't pan out. Well, he hasn't panned out because they didn't put anybody around him, you know, to block for him and catch pass. And, you know, that's not to say that Sam's going to turn into Joe Montana or anything like that, but I would have liked to have seen them give Sam one more go this year and see, you know, with some talent around him and a new system, because Adam Gase obviously proved to be not a very good head coach. You know, so there were, listen, I'm not trying to make excuses for Sam, even though we kind of are, but, you know, he wasn't really dealt a fair shake to my opinion. I think the Jets got decent value for him. I think there was some word out there they wouldn't even get a second round pick for him. I would have liked that second round pick to come in this year's draft, however. I think that would have been a little happier with that if I'm a Jet fan. But you mentioned the quarterbacks. Every single year, these quarterbacks get spun into the hype machine. And by the time the draft gets here, everybody's salivating over these guys. You know, and other than Trevor Lawrence, and Trevor Lawrence isn't even a lock to be a great NFL quarterback. You know, what did some of these guys, Zach Wilson had one incredibly good year in college. You know, look at his stats after that. What has he done? And you know, even this past year, you know, BYU doesn't play elite competition. And now the Jets are putting all of their, you know, specifically, you know, the general manager, Joe Douglas, is putting all of his eggs into that basket, basically. And I don't know, man. I'm not so trusting of that, to be honest with you. I'd have rather seen them try to keep Sam for another year, build around him. They weren't going to have to pay him big money until next year, you know, the fifth-year option. You know, Sam could have played for his, you know, for his career and his contract this year with the better talent around him. And who knows what might have happened. But we'll never know now. But I'll tell you what, I've always felt that wherever Sam goes, if he's got a good team around him, he's going to prove the Jets to be kind of knuckleheads for not putting people around him, because he's going to be a better quarterback. I'll be shocked if Sam Darnold's not a better quarterback in Carolina, you know, with some talent around him than he was with the Jets the last 3 years.
Mark, quickly, before we let you go, 7 days in Augusta, behind the scenes at the Masters. You wrote that book, so behind the scenes at the Masters, how palpable is Tiger Woods' absence in this tournament?
You know, it definitely is. I talked to a few players earlier in the week, did a column on it in the Post, just kind of about, you know, his presence not being here. Tuesday night in particular was not at the Champions dinner. I know Ben Crenshaw got up and, you know, had some really poignant words about how, you know, fortunate they all are that Tiger's injuries weren't life-threatening and, you know, how much he was missed and stuff. So yeah, it definitely is. But, you know, it's weird. You know, we're getting to a point now, guys, especially with this accident, you know, and we've already been to that point where, you know, we got to start getting used to the game without Tiger, because Tiger wasn't playing that much anyway prior to the horrific accident. And now, you know, who knows where these injuries are going to take him, whether he's going to be able to play competitively again. You know, we may only see Tiger playing ceremonial golf at Augusta, you know, like Jack and Arnie and the boys, you know, kind of, you know, transitioned into eventually. So from here on in. So, it's definitely different. But as I wrote in the column, man, the game goes on. I mean, you know, the new stars are here and we're paying attention to the Rorys and the Jordan Spieths and, you know, Koepkas and, you know, Brysons and everybody, DJ. You know, it rolls on, you know, I'm hopeful, you know, because I'm a golf junkie and I root for Tiger because, you know, it helps the game. You know, I'd love to see one more run with him where he's healthy enough to play at an elite level.
Mark, great stuff. Thanks a ton. Always appreciate it, bud.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, guys. Good talking to you.
That's Mark Cannizzaro from the New York Post. The name of the book, 7 Days in Augusta. You know, I'm going to miss Tiger. I know this is a stupid thing to say, but I love these celebrity, everybody mic'd up, running around golf and things. And I loved watching him and his excellence as he just is kind of this golfer that goes ahead and does his thing. And
it's good entertainment.
You know, it's great entertainment.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. 312-644-6767 is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours.
And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during O' Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, oh.